Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You are listening to The Evidence Locker. Our cases have been researched using open source and archive materials. It deals with true crimes and real people. Each episode is produced with the utmost respect to the victims, their families, and loved ones. The house at 20 Grass Tree Close, Bridgman Downs, stood proud in the warm sunshine of an early autumn afternoon. It was the large double-story family home of the Singh family. A house that has seen many happy times, but perhaps more frequently, some tumultuous times, as secrets and lies were exposed, and the line between love and hate was very thin. In April 2003, Vijay and Shirley Singh were on a business trip in Fiji and decided to leave their children at home. Neelma was 24, her brother Kunal, 18, and their little sister Siti, 12. Neelma was in between jobs, and promised her parents that she would take care of the household and her siblings. Everything was fine, until Tuesday afternoon, the 22nd of April. The inside of the house was engulfed in a wave of spine-chilling silence. The only sound was that of water bubbling in an upstairs spa bath. From three of the upstairs bedrooms were trails of blood leading into the bathroom. The taps were open, and hot water was pouring into the tub. It was overflowing to such an extent that the downstairs ceiling was bulging with the weight of the water. Inside were the bodies of Neelma, Kunal, and Siti, one stacked on top of the other. A scene that left even the most hardened first responders at a loss for words. What took place in the Singh home that led to the brutal deaths of the three siblings? The Singh family moved to Brisbane, Australia, from Fiji in the early 1990s. Vijay and Sheila Singh had four children, and over the years nurtured their roots by visiting Fiji often. Vijay imported and exported auto parts, and business was good. In 1997, the second oldest daughter, Neelma, was 16 when she started a relationship with a man called Amit Lala. She saw him behind her father's back because she was not allowed to date. But on a balmy October night, their secret was exposed when Neelma's father, Vijay, caught them speaking to each other on the phone. In a fit of rage, Vijay attacked his daughter with a pool cue. The punishment he dealt that day was so severe, Neelma couldn't walk for 3 days. Vijay Singh was charged with assault, fined $1,000, and sentenced to a 3-year good behavior bond. 2 years later, in August 1999, 18-year-old Neelma Singh went to Fiji, where she took a job as a receptionist at the Raffles Tradewinds Hotel in the city of Suva. During this time, she fell in love with a man called Jasveer Singh. Everybody called him Viru. Neelma was still in relationship with Amit Lala, so did not act on her feelings for Viru. Instead, she returned to Brisbane in December of the same year after working in Fiji for only 4 months. A year later, Neelma ended the relationship with Amit, saying that she wanted to work for an airline and see the world. She was not ready to settle down yet. She did not find her dream job straight away, however, but remained in the hospitality industry, working in guest services for Pacific International Apartments in Brisbane. In 1993, the family moved into a home in Stafford, in the north of Brisbane, next door to an Italian-Australian family, the Sikas. The Sikas had three children, Max, Claudio, and Rosanna. They had migrated to Australia from Naples in 1970. Mother Anna was pregnant with Max when they arrived in the south of Sydney, and he spent his formative years in the land down under. However, Anna struggled to adapt to her new life in Wollongong, and when Max was 11 years old, the family returned to Italy for 2 years. This time, Max was the one who struggled to fit into his parents' native country, and found the schools to be too restrictive. The Sikas returned to Australia, this time Brisbane, where Max graduated high school in 1987. Max Sika remembered that his family life was tainted with aggression and violence. When he was 5 years old, his father threatened to kill the whole family. His mother bundled the children into a room, and his father fired several shots through the door. After hearing that Max had told the story to his prison psychologist, his brother and sister defended their family and said that this alleged shooting never happened. In 1989, the Sika family moved into a home on Trouts Road, Stafford. The family owned an Italian restaurant, and all the kids were roped in to help out. Max Sika always felt that he was destined for something greater, and blamed his parents for making him work at the restaurant, which left him with no spare time to pursue his dreams. However, in later years, an IQ test proved that he was of average intelligence, not as intellectually strong as he believed he was. Despite complaining about his truckload of responsibilities, Sika did have free time. The only thing is, he chose to spend it, causing trouble. He met up with some guys he knew from high school, and the bunch of them were up to no good. They spent their night scanning police radio networks and burglarizing homes or businesses before setting buildings on fire. When they made their getaway, they listened to police communications and found the thrill of it all exhilarating. It is alleged that Sika had hidden ambitions to become a police officer, so he was quick to criticize law enforcement. Some nights, if he felt they took too long to respond to the scene of a burglary, he would call them and ask them what the delay was. On one occasion, Sika set a fire at a police station in an attempt to destroy evidence they had against him. Once he was caught, he did not own up to what he had done. Instead, he was quick to point the finger at his friends, blaming peer pressure for his actions. In letters he wrote to prison authorities, Sika claimed that he never drank alcohol, abused hard drugs, or gambled. He admitted to using marijuana from time to time, but that was all. In 1993, he was charged with no less than 83 offenses and sentenced to 9 years in prison. On this occasion, the judge said that 23-year-old Max Sika's actions were a display of lawlessness on a grand scale. A prison psychologist noted that the 23-year-old Sika was, without a doubt, a criminal psychopath, the worst kind. He was released on parole in 1996 after serving only 3 years. From appearances, it looked like Sika's criminal days were behind him. He found a job at a computer company, got married, and became a dad. But Sika was not cut out for a life of suburban bliss. He hooked up with one of his bad news school buddies again, and in October 1997, he was caught for throwing a Molotov cocktail at the house of a man who had angered him in the past. Sika said that they were high at the time, and that they had quite a bit to drink, contradicting his earlier statement in which he said that he never drank. For the most part, he blamed his friend for instigating the whole thing, including making the Molotov cocktail. Because of this attack, Sika was sent to prison again. An article in the Courier Mail quotes the psychological evaluation written by psychiatrist Ian Atkinson after he assessed Sika in 1999. It says, "This man quite clearly produces most of the symptomatology of a borderline personality disorder, mixed with some features of Italian family loyalty. What is very clear is that this man came from a very dysfunctional family. There were clearly lots of episodes of severe conflict between his father and his mother, resulting in her having a considerable amount of psychiatric treatment. His father was apparently aggressive towards the prisoner and, at times, threatened to kill him and other members of the family when he lost control of his temper." In May 2001, 31-year-old Max Sika was released on parole. He returned to his family home and became friendly with their neighbors, the Singh family. Sheila Singh ran her beauty and massage business from home and occasionally asked Sika to help her with her computer. Sika noticed Sheila's 21-year-old daughter, Neelma, and found any excuse to spend more time at the Singh home. In September 2001, Sika and Neelma began seeing each other in secret. They kept the romance quiet at first, as it was nothing more than an innocent affair. Within a couple of months, it had grown into a steamy relationship, and they went to great lengths to meet in secret. They only ever met romantically at Sika's family holiday apartment on Bribie Island, about 2 hours up the coast from Brisbane. But the tides were about to change. Neelma's dream of becoming an air hostess were coming true when she accepted to commence training as a flight attendant with Emirates Airlines, an opportunity that would take her to Dubai. Sika did not want to lose Neelma, and in March 2002, their relationship was exposed when he asked Vijay Singh for his daughter's hand in marriage. Vijay said no, and the conversation turned into a heated argument. Despite her father's disapproval, Neelma maintained a long-distance relationship with Sika while she was training to be an air hostess in Dubai, and he remained in Brisbane. Sika was finding his feet and trying his best to clean up his life in order to be in a stronger position to marry Neelma. He promised her that he would find her a job in Australia, working for Qantas, if she only came back to him. Around this time, Sika saw his parole officer and told him that Vijay Singh had threatened to kill him if he didn't break off the relationship with Neelma. In fact, Vijay Singh was so serious about breaking off all contact with Sika and his family that he sold his house and uprooted his family to a new home at Grass Tree Close in Bridgman Downs. Neelma Singh pined for her boyfriend and believed Sika when he said that he had secured a job for her in Australia. She quit her job at Emirates without telling her parents and returned to Brisbane in May 2002. Without her parents' knowledge, she moved in with Sika into his family's holiday apartment on Bribie Island. After 6 weeks, Sika made an anonymous phone call to the Singhs to tell them where Neelma was and that she was safe and cared for. A couple of weeks later, the honeymoon was over, so to speak, and Neelma moved back to her parents' home in Bridgman Downs. Living with Sika, she had become disillusioned about him. When the excitement of sneaking around and having an illicit affair had died down, she started seeing him for who he really was. Neelma told her mother that he was a compulsive liar. He was also very jealous and extremely possessive of her. Neelma suspected that Sika was a computer hacker and did not trust him anymore. As far as Neelma was concerned, their relationship was over. In August 2002, the Singh family hosted a party for Kunal's 18th birthday at their home. On this occasion, someone threw a brick through their porch sliding door, breaking the glass and causing a scene. Nobody saw who it was that threw the brick, but the family had their suspicions. Neelma's older sister, Sonia Patik, who was married and did not live in the family home, took matters into her own hands and emailed Sika. In their correspondence, Sonia called him a control freak and told him to stay away from her family. She knew Neelma could take care of herself, but she saw that her sister was struggling to move on from her relationship while Sika was still harassing the family. Shortly after this, Neelma tried to get her job back with Emirates, but her application to rejoin was denied. She had left her job because Sika promised her he had already lined up a job for her at Qantas. This was a blatant lie. He only wanted her to come back to Brisbane to be with him. As their relationship fell apart, Neelma realized that this man was going to ruin her life if she were to stay with him. So she went back home. But home was not the best environment either. Neelma told a friend that her mother had assaulted her in a fit of anger, surely resorted to physical violence in order to punish her own grown daughter, furious about the fact that Neelma brought Sika into their family. Vijay Singh was spending more and more time in Fiji, and Shirley had had enough. She knew he was unfaithful to her, and Neelma was drawn into her parents' marital issues. Shirley took Neelma to Fiji with her, with the intention of confronting the women who were sleeping with her husband. But Neelma was still looking for comfort with her ex-boyfriend Max Sika. She emailed him and confided in him about her father's infidelity, saying that he had as many as 6 to 8 mistresses in Fiji. Neelma said she wanted to get her father beaten and bruised. The implication was that she was asking Sika to do it. After the mother and daughter returned from Fiji, the Singh family home became the target for anonymous threatening phone calls. Vijay Singh reported the harassment and said that he suspected that the phone calls were made by one of the husbands of the women whom he had an affair with. Then, stunningly, he admitted that his wife could be behind the phone calls in an attempt to put an end to his philandering. In November 2002, Nilma visited Fiji once again. She met up with the man she knew from her receptionist days at Raffles Tradewinds, Viru Singh. Their latent feelings for each other flared up, and soon their romance developed into a passionate sexual relationship. When Nilma returned to Australia, they stayed in touch. From phone records, one can see that Sika was also still in contact with Nilma. Multiple phone calls were made between Nilma's mobile phone and the Sika's home landline. Around this time, an unknown person, only known by his email address, started rocking the boat in the Singh family home yet again. Raj@hotmail.com sent an email to the entire Singh family and members of the Fijian Indian community, exposing Vijay and Shirley's oldest daughter Sonia as a dominatrix. The photo, found on a BDSM website under the profile JazzBaby8, had been photoshopped. The original photo could be found on Sonia's home computer. Sika had hacked into her computer to access her personal photos, then used a friend's ID to create the Hotmail address, raj@hotmail.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One evening, Max Sika confronted Nilma's father, Vijay, at his house in Bridgman Downs. Sika accused him of sexually assaulting his youngest daughter, Siddhi. He also confronted him about his illicit affairs in Fiji and the pain he caused his family. Vijay Singh tried to get away from Sika and barricaded himself inside his home office. Sika broke the door down, grabbed him by the neck and pushed him up against the wall, threatening to take his life. It ended there, and Vijay Singh was not seriously injured, although his ego was bruised. He reported the incident to police and gave them a microcassette of the confrontation. Sika could be heard saying, "I know what you did to your daughter. I know what you did to us. I can cave your fucking head in right now and get away with it, capiche?" After the attack, Vijay moved in with his oldest daughter Sonia and her family because he feared for his safety. But there was more to it. On the tape recording, Sheila Singh can also be heard accusing Vijay of molesting his daughter. It was a story that Siddhi had told a school counselor that she had been abused, but there was no evidence to support her claim, so it was left at that. Shirley Singh was furious with Sika for attacking Vijay and banned him from ever coming to their home or her daughter ever again. The relationship between Sika and Nilma was over, but they were still in frequent contact. In December 2002, Viru Singh called Nilma from Fiji to wish her a happy birthday. Strangely, their phone conversation was cut off halfway through. Later that night, Viru received a threatening phone call from Sika, telling him to stop calling Nilma because she didn't want anything to do with him. He told Viru that he knew about their fling in Fiji, but that Nilma was now with him, and if Viru knew what was good for him, he'd stay away. But they weren't together. In fact, Nilma was becoming increasingly cautious of Sika and started keeping a diary of their phone calls. The Singh family changed all their locks and installed a security system, mainly to keep Sika out. In January 2003, Sika told a friend that his relationship with Nilma was over and done with because her parents were too involved and would not allow it. It seemed like Sika had finally accepted it and was ready to move on. Nilma wondered why Viru stopped calling, and reached out to him herself. She was confused when she learned that Sika had told him that they were together. She assured him that they were no longer romantically involved, and that they were also not together when Viru called for her birthday. She assured Viru that she was no longer in love with Sika. Neelma felt like Sika somehow listened to her conversations and read her emails. She called her internet provider to change her username and start a new connection. After Neelma had spoken to Viru about not being in love with Sika, Shirley Singh arrived home one afternoon to find Max Sika walking down the stairs in a huff. He exploded and told her, "Do you know that Viru has been fucking your daughter?" Afraid that Sika may have hurt Neelma, Shirley rushed upstairs to her daughter's room. Neelma was in a state of shock. She told her mom that Sika tried to strangle her, but she managed to fend him off. When Shirley went downstairs, there was no sign of Sika. Not long after this incident, another email was sent from Raj@hotmail.com. This time, the subject line read, "Singh Family Crisis." The email made the accusation that Vijay Singh had sexually assaulted his daughters. This was followed by another email with the subject "bot," which means gossip. Again, the email hoped to spread rumors about Sonia having a raunchy, promiscuous online sex life, none of which was true. Neelma reported her concerns about Sika's increasingly irrational and possessive behavior to Stafford police. She was accompanied by her father, and they played recorded phone conversations between Neelma and Sika to police. Police took the statement, but there was not much more they could do at that point in time, but advised Neelma to be alert and keep a log of her communications with Sika. Meanwhile, Sika met with his parole officer and told him that Neelma had been threatening him. According to Sika, it started when he ended the relationship, and he was concerned that her behavior was spiraling out of control. Then, things got strange. Sika reached out to Neelma's ex-boyfriend from her teenage years, Amit Lala. He accused Amit of wanting to get back together with Neelma. Amit denied it, but Sika was convinced he was chasing after Neelma. Distraught about the out-of-the-blue attack, Amit asked Neelma's brother Kunal to meet with him at a cafe in Brookside. Kunal opened up to Amit and told him about the bad blood between Sika and his family, and suggested Amit let sleeping dogs lie. However, Amit could not let it go. He had become concerned about his ex-girlfriend and made a point of calling Neelma every couple of days to check in. Then, another group email was sent out to the Singh family, their friends, and associates. This time, from the email address bot@anonpost.com. It was a forwarded message. The email Neelma had sent Sika from Fiji, in which she said she wished her father could be beaten and bruised after cheating on her mom. The email was followed by another one, containing naked photos of Neelma. This time, the sender also added Amit Lala to the mailing list. Neelma was mortified. She reported the slandering emails to police and told them that the photos were taken consensually when she was living with Sika on Bribie Island. Neelma started a fiery email exchange with Sika, telling him that she knew he was the one who had sent the photos. In the emails, Sika denies that he was Raj or Bot and incensed that she could think he would ever do anything like that. He vowed to find Raj if it was the last thing he did. He told a friend that he believed his computer had been hacked. He told the same friend that he was still sleeping with Neelma and that they made up elaborate stories to get together so that her father would not find out. Around this time, Sika also told Neelma that he was terminally ill. He said that he had a brain tumor and contemplated ending his own life. In a message to Neelma, dated March 15, 2003, he said, "It's hard to tell you everything when you keep hanging up. I have some stuff I really need to speak to you about. I haven't got long left, Nim. I'm sick." 2 weeks later, on the 1st of April, 2003, Sika seemed to have moved on at last. He started a new relationship with Nicole Zwarner, a woman he met online. Nicole was somewhat concerned about her new boyfriend's ex-girlfriend, but Sika assured her he was over Neelma. In fact, he told Nicole that he was working with Neelma's dad, her uncle, as well as some mutual friends, to set Neelma up with her teen sweetheart, Amit Lala. This could not have been farther from the truth. Firstly, Sika and Vijay Singh would never have done anything together, even if it was finding Nilma another boyfriend. His obsession with Amit Lala was also strange. Why was he trying so hard to bring him back into Nilma's life? On the 13th of April, Vijay and Shirley Singh flew to Fiji for one of their frequent business trips. Sika later admitted that even though he had a new girlfriend, he paid Nilma a couple of nocturnal visits. He said he had spent the night of the 13th, 15th, and 17th of April with Nilma at the Singh family home. He arrived at 10:30 p.m. and parked a distance away so her brother and sister would not see his car. Once they were asleep, Nilma would call his cell phone, hanging up after one ring. That was the signal that the coast was clear and Sika could enter through a back garage door that was left unlocked. After spending the night with Nilma, he would get up early and left before 6 a.m. so as to avoid her brother and sister. On the 13th of April 2003, Nilma Singh printed a Hindu blessing, an inspirational message hoping for recovery. She gave this to Sika because she thought he was dying. Both Nilma's and Sika's fingerprints were on the sheet of paper, so she must have given it to him. The Wednesday before Easter, Sika sent an anonymous text to Amit Lala, asking him to meet an old friend for lunch. Amit was curious, only found out Sika was behind the message when he saw him at the meeting point outside Queen Street Post Office. Sika told Amit a story that simply didn't fit into any semblance of the truth. Sika said that he was never romantically involved with Nilma because he was actually gay. Nilma helped him and posed as his girlfriend because he did not want his parents to know about his sexual orientation. He also told Amit the story of the inoperable brain tumor and said that he only had a couple of weeks left to live. He ended the conversation by giving Amit his blessing, should he want to rekindle his relationship with Nilma. The truth was that Sika was not gay. He was seeing Nicole Zwerner and wanted to be with her, but he was still sleeping with Nilma. His attempt to reconcile Nilma with her ex, Amit, was a manipulative piece of work. He knew that Nilma did not like Amit, but her family did. Pretending to be the gracious deathbed matchmaker who yearned to leave everyone in peace after he passed away was as conniving as it gets. Nilma did not know that Sika had been in contact with Amit and would definitely not have been okay with this macabre matchmaking effort. In fact, around this time, she was very concerned about Sika's ailing health. Sure, they've had their ups and downs, but they had been a vital part of each other's lives for 3 years, and the thought of him dying upset her deeply. Nilma confided in a friend about Sika's brain tumor. She also said that Sika had come out to her, but she was somewhat confused about the bombshell that he was gay. However, as he had limited time to live, she felt it was okay to keep on seeing him, which she did. On the Thursday night before Easter weekend, Nilma sent Sika a text at 11 p.m. "My arm hurts real bad. It is throbbing bad. Can't move it. Very sore. What should I do?" The next day was Good Friday, and Sonia had invited her siblings for breakfast. At breakfast, Nilma complained about her arm, but would not let Sonia look at it. She downplayed it and said she probably hurt it by sleeping on it, which wasn't true, as she had complained about it to Sika in the text the night before. In the afternoon, she sent Sika a text saying, "Arm's still very sore. I am good. It's all right about last night. Take it easy." She also spoke to Viru that day, who called to wish her a happy Easter. They had deep feelings for each other, and Viru recalled they even mentioned the possibility of marriage in their conversation. On the Saturday, Nilma went to a lunch party at New Farm Park. Her brother's girlfriend recalled seeing a bruise on her arm. When she asked her about it, she became defensive and said that she had bumped it on something. On the 20th of April, Easter Sunday, Sika told an inmate friend in Arthur Gori prison that he was still trying his best to get Amit Lala and Nilma together. He was furious with Nilma for telling her parents that he had a brain tumor and was facing imminent death. Why would he be furious if this is what he had told her? Clearly, the whole story was a lie. Between 5 and 8 p.m., the three Singh siblings were at home, and various texts were sent to friends and family members, all indicating they were having an unremarkable evening at home. Kunal had been invited to a party, but he didn't go because he wasn't feeling well. He told another friend that he would rather stay home because Nilma wanted a quiet night. Nilma was logged onto her computer between 5 and 7:30 p.m. In that time, she was chatting to friends on Messenger. She also printed out another Hindu blessing for Sika about healing. However, she never gave it to him. Nilma sent Sika a text saying, "Well, see you later tonight and then chat. I think I am coming down with something. Feeling the day before you get sick. We'll give you the one ring." Nilma's last message on MSN Messenger was to her sister Sonia at 8:30 p.m. In it, she said, "I have to go. There is someone at the door." At 10 p.m. that night, Sika's parents Carlo and Anna arrived home and found Sika and his brother Claudio playing games on the computer in Claudio's room. The next morning, Amit Lala sent Nilma a text message, inviting her out to lunch, but she did not reply. In fact, none of the Singh siblings replied to any messages or phone calls all day. On Tuesday morning, the 22nd of April, Nilma did not show up for a job interview at Flight Center, something she had been looking forward to. It was not until that afternoon when a call was made to Brisbane Emergency Services that the fate of the Singh siblings were made known. Max Sika told the operator that he had found three bodies in a bathtub, and they had to come quickly. He had arrived at the property around 2 p.m. with his two children and his niece. He would later state that he had gone to the Singh home so his kids could play with Nilma's younger sister, Siddhi, before they all left to see a movie. Painters who were painting a neighbor's house saw Sika go inside, entering through the back garage door for about 15 minutes before he came outside again. When he came outside, he was holding the Singh's pet dog, Bujo, which he gave to the children. Before Sika called 000, he called his parents and told them that Nilma was dead. Then he called emergency services. First responders arrived at the scene 20 minutes after receiving the phone call. The first paramedics to go inside had a look at the tub and concluded that there were only two bodies. It was only when a police officer went upstairs and had a closer look that he saw Kunal's body beneath the pillow, at the bottom of the three-high pile of bodies. How did Sika know that there were three bodies, if he only just stumbled across them? Vijay and Sheila Singh arrived home from Fiji to face the nightmare awaiting them at home. From the start, they were convinced that Max Sika was the one who had killed their children. On the day the bodies were found, Sika was interviewed at Petrie Police Station, accompanied by his father, Carlo. His testimony had some inconsistencies. For instance, he said that when he found the bodies, Siddhi Singh was wearing colored shorts, blue or green. Photographs taken of the bodies are said to show that Siddhi Singh was wearing black tracksuit pants, not shorts. The alarm was checked and it was found to be in working order, but it wasn't armed. None of the locks were broken, indicating that the killer was let into the house by Nilma, Kunal, or Siddhi, someone known to them. Some personal items were stolen from inside the home. For the most part, it was Nilma Singh's jewelry. More valuable property was untouched, like computers and cell phones. But Nilma's diary was missing. Nilma's blood was found on the carpet in her bedroom. The sheets had been removed from her bed and put in the bath with the bodies. The sheets showed evidence of bleaching, and bleach was also found in the bathroom, surrounding the spa bath. The chemicals in bleach is known to destroy DNA material. All three victims suffered head injuries caused by a garden fork. They were killed first, then taken to the bathtub. It was concluded that Nilma was killed first by manual strangulation, then hit over the head with the garden fork paramortem, which means either just before or just after she passed. Siddhi, who often slept in her parents' room with the light on because she was afraid of the dark, died from blunt force trauma to the head. Kunal also suffered blunt force trauma, but he was placed in the bathtub while he was still alive, but unconscious. In the end, he drowned. On the 25th of April, Sika conducted a walkthrough of the Singh home with police. Footage of a distraught Sika outside the Singh home was aired on the news. He was wearing a blue forensic suit, wiping away tears as his father supported him. 10 days later, police found the murder weapon, the garden fork, behind a barbecue in the Singh's garage. On May 14th, a funeral was held for all three Singh children. When Max Sika arrived to pay his respects, Shirley and Vijay Singh requested police took him away. He was not welcome. When the dust had settled, Vijay and Sheila were faced with an empty home that used to always be busy and full of action. The silence after losing their children must have been deafening. They kept the three bedrooms the way Nilma, Kunal, and Siddhi had left them, as a shrine. In the moments after the deaths, Sika spoke candidly with the media and told reporters that the brain tumor was a made-up story. But he said that it was Nilma's idea. She thought that if they told their parents he was terminally ill, they would have more sympathy towards him. He even professed his innocence before he was officially named a suspect. It took investigators 5 years to build the case against Sika. Queensland police kept surveillance on him, and international experts were consulted about footprint evidence and DNA evidence. Forensic computer and telecommunications analysis experts were also brought in to cipher through all the fake emails and actual conversations between Sika and the Singh family. A footprint expert could not definitively conclude that the footprints at the scene made by someone wearing socks were made by Max Sika. Investigators learned that Sika owned two personal computers. On the evening of Monday, April 21st, the night before the bodies were discovered, he activated a program to delete all data from one of them. His second computer, kept at the family holiday apartment on Bribey Island, revealed a list of email addresses identical to those to which the nude photographs of Nilma Singh were sent. So this proved that Sika was behind the harassing emails. But did it prove that he was a murderer? 5 years after the murders, a friend of the Sika family, called Andrea Bowman, said that Sika told her, "Do you know how hard it is to kill someone when somebody says, please don't please?" A month later, she tried to record him confessing again, but he denied ever having confessed in the first place. On the 22nd of December, 2009, Sika married his girlfriend Shiva. But their marital bliss was short-lived when, a week later, he was charged with all three murders in the Singh case. Max Sika's trial began just over 2 years later, on the 31st of January, 2012. He pleaded not guilty. The admission of guilt by Andrea Bowman was a contentious issue. Sika's defense team tried to have the evidence excluded, but their application was denied. Sika's phone call from the Singh residence shortly after discovering the bodies was played in court to support their argument that he was the one who had committed the murders. The fact that he knew there were three bodies in the spa bath when first responders only saw the body of Siddhi Singh begged an explanation. On the 3rd of July 2012, Max Sika was found guilty of all three murders. He was sentenced to life imprisonment with a non-parole period of 35 years. Never in the history of Queensland had a punishment been this harsh. Justice Byrne said that Sika was manipulative and deceitful and showed no remorse. He added, "Your only anxiety is for self-preservation." When Sika was given the opportunity to address the court, he said, "I didn't kill no one. The Queensland justice system is corrupt." Sika filed an appeal, which was dismissed in 2013. The Sika family has many supporters who believe that he is in fact innocent and that his is a case of miscarriage of justice. Carlos Sika said in court, "If I believe my son had committed such a horrible crime, I would kill him myself." After the Singh murder trial, Sika was charged with 21 sex offenses, which included maintaining a long-term sexual relationship with an underage girl for 4 years. The girl was only 9 when the alleged affair began. Sika requested a judge-only trial because he felt that after his conviction of the murder of the Singh siblings, he would not receive a fair trial by jury. In March 2013, Sika was found not guilty on all 21 charges due to a lack of evidence. This verdict was met with great joy by Sika's family and supporters, who believed that there was a witch hunt out to get Max Sika at any cost. There is no doubt that Max Sika is a troubled man with a propensity for violence. But in the murders of the Singh siblings, there are some loose ends that do not fit into the case against him. Firstly, there is the lack of motive. Why would Sika want Nilma and her siblings dead? The relationship between him and Nilma was perhaps rocky and clandestine, but they were still very much a part of each other's lives. Text messages between them proved that it was consensual. She did ask him to come over, and she left the door open for him so he could sneak into her home. Which beckons the next question. If they went through so much trouble to avoid Kunal and Siddhi seeing Sika at the Singh home, would he go to the front door at 8:30 knowing everyone was still awake? Remember Sonia said her last message from Nilma was that there's somebody at the door? Who was it? Is there perhaps an outside chance that the actual target was Vijay Singh? Could it be that one of his mistress's husbands took his revenge by taking his romantic rival's family from him? Could it be the same person who had made the threatening phone call? A recording of the call was played in court. An identified man said, "You are fucking with my family, and I am going to fuck with your family." On the night of the murders, an unidentified car was seen near the Singh house. Neighbors saw a dark blue car parked at the end of the cul-de-sac, but the car was gone the next morning. They also saw a tall, slender man get out of the vehicle and walk towards the Singh home, but could not identify him. The car was similar to Sika's, and the description of the man resembled Sika, but it is very circumstantial. In April 2019, 16 years after the murders, Sika requested a pardon. A breakthrough in forensic drowning research was published in 2017. If this is considered in examining the crime scene at the Singh home, the times of death changed dramatically. It would mean that Nilma, Kunal, and Siddhi were not killed in the night of Easter Sunday going into Easter Monday, but 14 to 26 hours later, a time frame for which Max Sika has a reliable alibi. However, that would not explain why all three siblings were not responding to text messages and phone calls during the entire day of Easter Monday. The last contact that they had with anyone was on Sunday night. Sheila Singh dismissed the new theory, saying, quote, "It's a load of crap. I am 100% certain Max Sika killed my children." End quote. Max Sika is currently serving his life sentence at the maximum security section of the Wakel Correctional Center. He will only be eligible for parole in 2047. If you'd like to read more about this case, have a look at the resources used for this episode in the show notes. Also, visit and like our Facebook page at facebook.com/evidencelockerpodcast to see more about today's case. If you like our podcast, please subscribe in Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. We would also appreciate it if you could review the episodes, as it gives us some street cred in the world of podcasting. And while you're waiting for our next episode, why not listen to one of our podcasting friends?
I'm Woody Overton, host of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. Join me each week to hear true and unscripted stories of the cases I actually worked during my career as a major crime investigator in South Louisiana. Go to realliferealcrime.com where you can listen to each week's episodes and find links to our social media. I appreciate y'all. Don't let me catch you down on Murder Bayou.
This was The Evidence Locker. Thank you for listening.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Do you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.